Shalom, everybody. This is Brayton and Tally Waller with the Voice of My Beloved podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I have the privilege of interviewing my wife today. We're switching roles a little bit, and I'm going to be asking her some questions. You know, this whole subject that we're getting into now of the bride, you know, waiting for her bridegroom to come, this really, she is the one who really carries that, you know, as far as the body goes. And so, you know, I was more the, you know, the picture of the bridegroom, you know, is in my human frailty, but yet that's what marriage is all about, is, you know, the taking frail humans and depicting this picture of a glorious spiritual reality. Mm-hmm. So, but Tally is the one that is the bride in this whole picture, which is who we reflect in the body. And so we're going to be getting into that today. Before I do, though, I want to mention that we're going to be hosting a Sukkot gathering here in Missouri.
Yep.
For 14 years, I did Sukkot in the land of Israel, the Feast of Tabernacles. And this year, it's a little bit sad, but I'm going to be here in Missouri. But we're still going to make this little southeastern corner of Missouri a place of rejoicing during the Feast of Sukkot. It's a command during Sukkot to rejoice.
Yep. Do you want to tell people how you do that? How Brayton enforces joy on during Sukkot. How do you do it?
I try to keep it pretty lighthearted, but sometimes if I notice that people have a kind of a sour look on their face, I go up and from behind and start tickling them just to make sure that they will, you know, get into the whole spirit of the feast of, you know, rejoicing and things. So
does it work?
With some people it does. Now with Tally, it's a different story because she hates people tickling her.
I learned that pretty early on.
Yeah,
I go into Krav Maga kind of mode and start screaming.
She takes on her martial arts and just starts, chopping
away.
I'm
very dangerous.
But anyway, yeah, I just love that about the Feast of Sukkot, that it's a command to rejoice. And so you have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do it.
So we're about a month out from that. So
yeah, if any
it's
of you,
fun. We're starting to make plans and get excited and
If any of you want to join us, we'd love to have you join us here, and we're going to have a great time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's feast. Information's on the website, loveandpurity.com. Do you want to say, we missed last week. We didn't do a podcast last week, so we have been... I have been dealing with some health issues, which I've mentioned a couple times over the past couple months. So we're still kind of working through it. I'm feeling much better though now.
Yes, praise God.
So praise God after last week's blip, doing much better. And yeah, I really appreciate those of you out there because I know a lot of you are praying for me and I really appreciate that. But yeah, I'm feeling good and feeling the breakthrough. I know God... It's really good. We're reading this George Mueller book right now. And it's so good. One of the, what is it? YWAM series?
Yeah,
right?
YWAM puts out the series of,
So we're reading this George Mueller book. And anyway, he in the beginning of his story, he had like a really serious sickness. And God used a lot of these things to direct his life and stuff. And so it was encouraging. Like, God's got a plan in all of this. And we just have to trust him. And I'm learning how to... let go of things in my life that I cling to so tightly at times. So it's good. I know that God's doing a good work in it. Feeling much better. Last weekend, we went to Kentucky and did a Love and Purity presentation out there.
It was good to do that. It's been a while since we had done that. You know, as far as with a group.
It was really fun. It was actually kind of messed me up a little bit because we were planning for today and I was trying to think, what have we talked about on the podcast? Because we shared everything last week too, so hopefully we won't get mixed up too much. But this week we get to talk about the betrothal season, which is so fun. This is really fun to talk about. We have we went through the betrothal ceremony last time, and went through just the step by steps of kind of what all the pictures are there and the actual ceremony and making covenant and just what a huge thing that is, the making a covenant. And so I just wanted to kind of wrap that up, like what that kind of looked like. And so this is like a really big deal. We said that it's really big deal. The covenant's made. And so what this looked like, I actually wore my mom's wedding dress for this. And it was really, you know, it was a very formal kind of occasion, small but formal. And so, anyone else looking at us going through this, you know, it was a really big deal. Looked like a wedding. We're saying our vows. We're not kissing, but we held hands and that was really sweet, and saying I love you and all of that. And so this is big climax, you know, the big thing is done. You've made this covenant with this person, the one covenant you make on earth, you know, outside of your covenant with God, the only person you make covenant with in your whole life. And so it's really huge. And then, you know, at most wedding ceremonies, you get to the end of the wedding ceremony and the bride and the groom hop into a car and they drive into, you know, happily ever after or whatever. And, but that, this is where everything, the whole story shifts. And it's like, you know, if you're watching this thing thinking, I know exactly what to expect next, this is where everything's like, you don't know what to expect, right? And so instead of us hopping into a car and leaving together, Braden comes to me at the end of this all, and he takes my hands and he says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. And he walks out the door, and we aren't to see each other again until the time of the wedding, which at this point, we didn't know when our wedding was going to be.
Right.
I mean, we thought it was going to be sometime, not crazy far away.
Wasn't for sure yet.
But yeah, we were not sure yet.
And just to jump in there, I was really going to go prepare a place for us, because it turns out that Kenny, Tally's dad, had bought this place in Tennessee that had an unfinished house on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had the framework all up, but didn't have the sheetrock and a lot of the inside. So I was really going to prepare a place for her. So,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't just that I thought, well, Yeshua said this when he left, you know, the earth. So I'm going to say it too. You know, it really was. I was going to prepare a place for us to spend our first year in.
Yeah, yeah. And this is the part, if you've seen the documentary Betrothed, which documents Brain and I's story, this part is where all of my children break down crying. It's like, it's the sweetest thing. My, like, down to my 3-year-old, they all just tears well up in their eyes. And they're like, oh, but you're going to come back for Eva, right? It's like such an emotional time.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever experienced this. If you're a father, if you ever mentioned in the car that, what if you do, you know, some fathers do this. I don't know if this is common, but it's like, what if we leave Ema behind, you know, leave her in the car, just kind of playing with the children. They get really emotional about that. You know, they're like really attached to their mother.
Yep. So this is a very hard thing for the children to watch on there. And I just want to just say that this is the part of the story that is, it's like the mysterious part, the part that has been hidden, you know, that God has allowed really to be hidden for years. And this is the part that trips up people, kind of like, what? Okay, weddings, I get weddings. Engagements, I get engagement. But like this whole making a covenant and then the wedding is some time later. What does that mean? What does that season mean? What does it mean you're married but you're not together? That's a very strange concept to people. And so I wanted to talk about the pictures that we see in the Bible, that, you know, the pictures that the people of God played, the story of Israel played, that points to this whole picture. So do you want to talk about just like the children of Israel one?
Yeah. So we see in Jeremiah where, you know, we mentioned it last podcast, but how in Jeremiah, he says, you went after me in the wilderness, speaking to the children of Israel when they come out of Egypt. You went after me in the wilderness, and he speaks of that as the love of their betrothal. So we see the wilderness experience as being a betrothal season for the children of Israel. They're going through trials. They're going through hard times. It's like, you know, God is there in the tabernacle, and he's present, but there's also this season of just difficulty, you know, preparing them to enter into the promised land, into the fullness of their covenant with God.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the same is true with us, is we're going through this betrothal season. Yeshua even said, I'm with you always, mm-hmm. right? Even to the end of the age. Yes, he's with us, but there's this element of we're waiting for the fullness of him being with us. We want to have that vision for, we want to be with you fully, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
So that's what we're looking at today, is this idea of a longing,
mm-hmm.
a mourning for, and Yeshua even mentions this, Jesus mentions this with fasting. You know, we're fasting out of longing to be with him fully.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but Tally can speak from this from a really strong emotional perspective, because she experienced this in the season of waiting.
Yeah, like I, you know, I'm just, even as Braden's saying that, I'm thinking of like this time of separation that we went through. Braden would say to me, I love you, right? And he would, and we would have just, we had a beautiful relationship growing in love and stuff, but that is bumped to a much different level when we are physically with each other then, right? Like, so it's just, and I just want us to understand that picture. Like, that's what we're longing for. Like, we have a very close, intimate relationship with Yeshua right now. Mm. And it's like that relationship, that betrothal relationship of loving and growing in love. But we have, like, how much more do we have to look forward to when the fullness of it all comes in? And so just to make that comparison there. So I'm just like, I like to kind of just think of this in the, you know, through the eyes of the children of Israel. You've got children of Israel. Okay. Now they're in Egypt without God, without a husband. I mean, like, they're really lost for the most part, and they're crying out, like, where are you? Okay. And so then God shows up, right? And God comes and they're like, well, who is this God? Is he really the one? And he does all of these signs and wonders to, like, convince him. It's like his way of wooing. This is just the way I see things. So the God is, like, wooing the children of Israel. He's doing all these signs and wonders and saving them and loving them. And it's this amazing thing. He parts the Red Sea, and then he takes them up. And this climax is Mount Sinai. I make covenant with this people forever. And it's this, like, huge thing. And so this, the thing that trips up people, like the children of Israel at this point, is they're like, okay, God's good. He's our husband. Look at how much he's done for us. Now, of course, life is just going to be happily ever after now, right? Mm. God's just going to come, take care of us. It's all going to be happily ever after now. And this is what I'm talking about, the whole betrothal thing, like, tripping people up. Okay. So, but no, that's not what happens. They have to go into this betrothal season, into this wilderness season where they're tested on their covenant. Are you going to keep to the covenant? Will you remain faithful? Will you keep your word? Will you chase after me? Will you wait for me? Will you prepare for me? And so that's the testing that goes on in this wilderness season. And man, it's hard. It's the children of Israel, you know, it was hard, trial after trial, testing after testing. And I love how that God looks at that in such a like, he sees that as beautiful. Okay. And so then the children of Israel go through this testing time. And then the wedding is when they enter Israel with Joshua, right? That's like the great fulfillment, being given the land and the promises come to fruition. And so then we fast forward and we've got Yeshua comes to the earth, right? He comes to the earth and he comes to the people of Israel. And they're like looking for Messiah. Save us from these Romans. Save us from this bondage of dictatorship and whatever, of oppression. Yeah. And so Yeshua comes and he's like, he's wooing them. He's doing signs and wonders and he's teaching them and he's loving them. And he has these disciples and they go through this whole season. And the disciples are like, oh, okay, I think this is the one. This is amazing what we're seeing. And then they go through this whole, the Last Supper, this Passover Seder, where he offers them to come into covenant with them. And they say, yes. And they're like, yes. And then he pays this bride price and he gives their life. He gives his life. And then he's raised from the dead. And then it's like, sure thing. This is the Messiah. This is him. This is huge. He's the one we've been waiting for. And everyone's thinking, now we're going to go into happily ever after, right? He's going to kill all the Romans. We're going to take the land of Israel. The temple's going to be, you know,
the kingdom's purified.
The kingdom's here. It's here now, you know? And so, but then what happens? Yeshua comes, takes them up to a mountain, and he says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. And he leaves and he sends his Holy Spirit. And the people of God, the people of Messiah, enter into this season of betrothal yet again. We find ourselves in this place. And so here we are. This is the season that we're in right now. And so I feel like this is a piece to the puzzle that has been hidden, that God has purposely allowed to be hidden. Because I feel like God revealing it in this hour means that we're getting closer. And I've said that before, but, it's a very exciting thing, that God is bringing back this reality of betrothal season. And so, yeah.
I'm gonna jump in there and just add too. One of the questions that comes up in this season is, how could a good God allow this to happen? Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the theological questions that arises. And this is one of those things that, you know, if you're not grounded in love, if you're not grounded in the truth of who God is, you may not see that a good God will sometimes allow you to go through trials in order to refine your character, mm-hmm. you know. And so if it's just more of a candy machine relationship of I'm just funneling out blessings whenever I want, I just turn this knob and I get my blessings, you know, God is so good to me, you know, if that's all your relationship is based on and it's not on this refining process, anybody that's married knows that when you get married, there's a refining process that takes place.
Right.
You start getting the edges smoothed off on you. Mm-hmm. And so the same with God. When you enter into covenant with him, there's this process of refining, mm-hmm. and he's making a bride ready for his son. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that you have to see that vision. You have to have vision for that end goal, mm-hmm. or else the trials will make no sense to you. Mm-hmm. You'll not be able to believe in a good God going through trials. Mm-hmm. So this is so important to have this vision, yeah. for going through trials. Yes, I'm still betrothed. I'm still, my beloved is mine and I am his, you mm-hmm. know, still having that understanding mm-hmm. will help you cope.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, cause in the Bible, it's commanded to remember the story of the Passover, of the Exodus from Egypt. And I think that's a big thing too, is to, cause these children of Israel, I know all of us reading the story, we all think they're crazy, you know, cause you read this, you know, it was just 3 pages ago that God parted the Red Sea for them and saved them, you know, released them from slavery. How could they be complaining about whatever? But it's the thing that the enemy continually wants to do is get us to focus on the trial, forget everything else, just focus on the trial, on the hardship right now, and don't think about anything else, and you'll give up, you'll die, you'll find another way, and you'll get lost, you know. So that's the tactic of the enemy. And so God's trying to combat that, and he's saying remember. And it's why we're commanded to remember the Exodus, and it's also why we're commanded, or why it says that in, you know, that by the word of our testimony, right, that we overcome through the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. And so when we give a testimony, it's us remembering what God has done in our lives, what Yeshua has done in our life. And so it's why those things are given, is because we have to remember that. Because the season, the wilderness season, the betrothal season, it's not all fun and games. It's not a party. We're waiting for the party. But and there's good times in there. There's great times in there. But it's a place where God wants us to, I love that passage in the Song of Solomon where it talks about leaning on her beloved. That's what he wants. He wants us to lean on
him. Who is this coming out of the wilderness? Leaning on our beloved. Toward the end of the journey. You know,
at the end. Yeah, yeah. That's
where we'll be found.
Yeah.
That's where the body will be found. It will not be, you know, some people think, well, we're just going to get stronger and stronger and stronger, you know, the closer we get to the end. Well, the truth is we're going to be found more and more leaning upon him who is strong.
Right.
That's going to be our true identity. And because truly, when you lean upon him, you have inexhaustible strength. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're found fully abiding in him, but it takes a level of surrender, you know, mm-hmm. a full level of surrender. You know, you're totally leaning upon him for your strength, mm-hmm. and that's where we'll truly flourish.
Right, right. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the other Song of Solomon?
Yeah. The Song of Solomon is such a beautiful story of the bride being made ready, of the bride coming to maturity. And so we see, and you can even look at the Song of Solomon as the beginning is a lot about what the bride gets from the bridegroom. You know, her inheritance, you could say, of what the bride gets in the bride from the bridegroom. The second half, a lot of that's in that, is what the bridegroom gets from the bride. And so it's two way. you know, in American Christianity particularly, we would like to focus on the first half of Song of Solomon. You know, that would be our, like, our goal. It's like, oh, I get so much from him. I get salvation and redemption and healing and all these things. But the truth is that that's just half the story. He redeemed us. Yes, and that's a beautiful thing. He has given us so much. But there's also this other half of the book of Song of Solomon that talks about what we give him. And it's our worship, our adoration, our love. And he's worthy of that. And this is something that we are part of his inheritance. And so in that second half of the Song of Solomon, there's this beautiful tension that happens. The bridegroom leaves for a season, and the bride goes after him, looking for him. And she's even in these, you know, dangerous situations where it says the watchmen wound her. She's going through this trial. She's going through this hard time in the dark of the night. She's, you know, some people call it the dark night of the soul. She's like, she's grappling with, oh, where are you, God? Where are you? But even in the midst of that, if you look at Song of Solomon, chapter 5, she says, she gives this beautiful praise of her bridegroom. You know, even going through that time of separation from him, she said, my beloved is white and ruddy, chief among 10,000. She goes in this whole praise, this whole 5-6 verse praise of the bridegroom. So this has a profound effect on the bridegroom, because we look in chapter 6 and the daughters of Jerusalem are saying, where is your beloved? You know, where is he at? And she, then the bridegroom, when he comes back in the scene and he actually addresses the bride again, he says, turn your eyes away from me, for they have overcome me. So this pursuit and this love, even in this time of separation, profoundly affects the bridegroom. And so what Tally's talking about here, this time of betrothal, when you go through these trials, these feelings of aloneness, whatever it may be, woundedness even, and you still praise the king, you still praise the bridegroom, you call him your beloved, he's not forsaken you. He may just for a season be withholding his near presence from you, but he's still beautiful, you know, and this is what the bride is saying. My beloved is white and ruddy, chief among 10,000. Mm-hmm. And so this is a beautiful thing. But this affects him so much. He's like, oh, wow, I just can hardly even take it. Your eyes, turn your eyes away from me. They've overcome me. This devotion, this love that is coming from you is moving me to such in the depths of my being. Mm-hmm. And so this is the impact that the bride, you may be feeling like, oh, man, this is just the pits, you know, I'm just going through the, but when you choose to praise your king, mm-hmm. even in those times, you have a profound effect on him. Mm-hmm. And he's speaking that over you. Oh my, this is mm-hmm. almost unbearable. The amount of love and devotion I feel coming from
good.
You.
Yeah. And I love too, cause right before, I just quickly glanced at it before we started talking here, but I think even while the daughters of Jerusalem are questioning the bride, they're saying, well, where did he go? And she says, right before he comes in, I think she says, he's gone to his mountain of spices. Mm-hmm. And I love that, like, just as you're talking here, because she's confident of where he is. She's not like, you know what? He's gone. He's gone. That's it. Yeah, you're right. Where did he go? I'll go after another one. We'll go find another lover or whatever. And I think that that's the temptation within that season, you know, is that people are coming, where is he? Well, if God's good, why isn't he helping you? Or why isn't, but the bride, her confidence is very strong. And she says, I know where he is. He is preparing a place for me. He is, you know, you know, so there's a confidence in knowing. And so I think declaring that to the questioning spirit, to the people that question and want to get us thrown off, I think that's a beautiful thing too. Just saying, no, I'm so confident that you can ask me questions. You can, mm-hmm. and I know where he is. I know who my beloved is. And there's just such a beauty in that.
Yeah. Much of the progression and maturity is growing in confidence and love, mm-hmm. growing in confidence that you are loved and cherished by the king.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of the maturity process. Mm-hmm. That no matter what you go through, you have this rock solid foundation. I am loved. I am cherished. I know it.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to, you know, I don't think we mentioned this, but just earlier in this story, when she can't find the beloved, she's getting beaten. Like yeah. she said, I went through the streets and I got, you know, they came and they beat me and stuff. And so this isn't like a cakewalk that she's, this is a really difficult time, but she still, that's what she clings to. So we're at 25 minutes now, and I'm thinking that we're going to save this next bit for next week. Next week, we're going to talk about just what it is like, this whole betrothal season, what the focus is, how to engage. So we will see you next time. This is Braden and Tally reminding you to listen to the voice of your beloved bridegroom. He is coming quickly.